The Way of the Wise Art, being given by John Rawson in Australia, Level 2, The Christ Mysteries, Module 5, The Working of Christ in the Etheric. The colours, an orange light radiates out into a deep blue. Welcome back to the Way of the Wise Art. Now you may remember from level 1 that just as the number 3 is connected to the soul and the number 4 to the astral, so the number 5 bears a relationship to the etheric body. You may also remember that the etheric body is important for 4 important functions. Number 1, it is the life body and provides us with our vitality, energy, health, and also our sexuality. Number 2, it is the body we have in common with the plant world. 3, the etheric holds our memories, including the memories of previous incarnations. Number 4, it is the body of light. To these 4 roles, we can now add a 5th. It is the organ of clairvoyance. The verse describing number 5 is very short. In 5, we see the life of man. In it, we find his course, his plan. Memory is kept alive from life to life in number 5. Let us focus for a moment on the life function of the etheric. You may have noticed that the word life in that verse was repeated 3 times. So we're going to think about life and the etheric, and our question for this module is this: how did the Christ event affect our etheric body? Some of this story is told in the central picture on the image page. William Blake, the artist, wrote the following lines underneath the painting. Albion rose from where he laboured at the mill with slaves. Giving himself for the nations, he danced the dance of eternal death. Now, Blake's personal mythology is complex and convoluted. Sometimes Albion means England, but at other times Albion is a figure of Christ in his poetry. Blake himself was an enigmatic individual. He made his living as an engraver and left behind a body of unique art. He is also recognized as one of the greatest English poets, and some of us may remember memorizing "Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the darkness of the night" in our school days. The source of Blake's uniqueness lies in his visionary gift. You may remember the story from level 1 of the young Blake's vision of the angel in the tree, for which he was soundly thrashed by a disbelieving father. Blake's visions, however, deepened as he grew older, and much of his most obscure poetry can only be understood as the insights of a clairvoyant into the spiritual worlds of his time. There is a lot of darkness in the visions of Blake, but that was because there was a lot of darkness in the spiritual worlds of his age. Like all the great clairvoyants of the Western tradition, however, Blake knew precisely the reason for the incarnation of Christ. And he wrote this: "Pitying, the Lamb of God descended through Jerusalem's gates to put off mystery time after time. And as a man is born on earth, so was he born of fair Jerusalem. He stood in fair Jerusalem to awake into Eden the fallen man, but first to give his vegetated body to be cut off and separated, that the spiritual body may be revealed." In Blake's symbolism, Jerusalem represents the higher spiritual worlds. And indeed, we know that Christ was required to put off mystery, to be born as a man on earth. The purpose of Christ, as Blake sees it, was to awake up into Eden the fallen man. In other words, to return humanity to its original spiritual state. According to Blake, this has to be done by Christ first giving up his vegetated body to be cut off and separated. The vegetated body is, of course, the etheric body, which we have in common with the vegetable or plant kingdom. What Blake has depicted in the central figure of the image page is in fact the etheric body of Christ. We have included a large version of this picture with this module. The scanning of this particular version shows up the incredible rainbow light which streams from it. In the Gospel of St. John, Christ says, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me shall not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." I cannot think of a better description of the etheric body than the light of life. From Module 4, we remember that the soul works on the etheric to transform it into the intellectual soul. We know that when we die, our etheric dissolves and returns to the etheric of the planet. However, when an initiate dies, the etheric body can actually be kept in the spiritual worlds so that it can be given to another soul who needs its qualities for their particular task. What happened to the etheric body of Christ? Christ was not just an initiate. Christ was a part of the Godhead. So the etheric of Christ becomes an impulse which works within the whole etheric of the planet. Rather than working within an individual consciousness, the etheric of Christ can work within the consciousness of whole nations. I'll say that again. The etheric of Christ can work within the consciousness of whole nations. Nations, like people, have a lifespan. They are born, they come to maturity, and eventually they die. If we look back in history, we can often perceive where the etheric of Christ has entered into the consciousness of a nation. This is where a nation chooses freedom for its people rather than control. And because the intellectual soul is associated with beauty, we can see sometimes that a culture has a flowering of the arts, especially music, art, and poetry. As John's Gospel puts it, a new life enters into the culture, and this produces a new life in the world. Around the 15th and 16th centuries, the Christ etheric impulse entered strongly into various European nations. William Blake, being English, was acutely aware of the struggles in his own nation and culture to become free. Blake's metaphor for the new consciousness is Jerusalem. His metaphor for the old consciousness is the factories and the mills which enslaved the souls of men for gain. And this vision of Christ working within the etheric of the English nation is enshrined within one of his most famous poems. And did those feet in ancient times walk upon England's mountains green? And was the Holy Lamb of God on England's pleasant pastures seen? And did the countenance divine shine forth upon our clouded hills? And was Jerusalem builded here among these dark satanic mills? There is another element to the working of the Christ etheric within the world, and that is to do with thinking. Look now at the symbol of the pentagram in the top left-hand corner of the image page. According to the Neoplatonist philosopher Ioan Blicus, who wrote A Life of Pythagoras, the pentagram was a symbol of Pythagoras and the Pythagoreans. There are a number of reasons why this might be so. The Pythagoreans called it hugeia, which roughly translated actually means health. Hugeia has the connotation of vitality and vigour. So the term refers us to the life force of the etheric body. The second reason the Pythagoreans liked this particular figure is to do with the mathematical ratios of the figure itself. The pentagram is filled with examples of the golden ratio. A mathematical definition of the golden ratio is quite cumbersome. But the ratio occurs in many proportions in nature, including in the proportions of the human body. Because of this, it has been extensively used by artists. You can see an example of this if you turn back one moment for a page to Module 4. I'll give you a moment to turn back this page. We want to focus on the central picture and especially on the triangle in the circle. This is actually a special triangle. It's called a golden triangle because the ratio of the length of the two long sides of the triangle to its base make a golden ratio. Let's say that again. It's a golden triangle because the ratio of the length of the two long sides, which are both equal in length, of the triangle to its base make a golden ratio. A golden triangle is an isosceles triangle with a vertex, the angle where the two lines meet, of precisely 36 degrees. The early Pythagoreans actually constructed such triangles to get an approximation to the golden ratio. Pythagoras, in fact, brought an impulse into the Western world which worked on the etheric of the Greek civilization. This impulse was responsible for an immense development of the mind as we witness in the development of philosophy and mathematics. Now you can turn back the page and we will return to the images of Module 5. The relationship of the etheric to the human body and to mathematics is portrayed in the drawing at the top right-hand corner of the image page, back on our Module 5 page. Here we have the figure of the ideal man inside the circle. This displays the connection between the mathematical ratios of the pentagram and the human body. The superimposition of the pentagram over the physical body, however, shows that the transformation is not just on the etheric levels, but is to do with the physical body. You will remember from Module 4 that the working of the soul upon the physical body creates the consciousness soul. 500 years on, we are just beginning to see the results of this working of the soul. Now, 500 years before Christ, the impulse then giving in the etheric created a form of thinking we now call philosophy. Philosophy is an attempt to understand the whole of the cosmos, visible and invisible, through the mind. The impulse given in the 15th century, however, created a form of thinking we call science. Science differs from philosophy because it is focused completely on the visible or physical world, the world of the five senses. In the last 500 years, this focus has transformed our understanding of the physical levels, but it comes at a cost. And this cost is disenfranchisement from spirit. Once again, turn back one page to Module 4. On this page, again, we'll address our attention to the middle image. And in the centre of this image, we see a naked man and woman. Here, these images represent our descent from the etheric state the Bible calls Eden. Now we're going to go back to Module 5. There is a purpose for all this toing and froing. Now back at Module 5, turn your attention to the image in the bottom left-hand corner of the page. Once again, we see the naked man and woman. But this time, they are in chains and under the authority of a demonic figure. Actually, the figures don't look very disturbed with their lot. In fact, they are growing little horns and a tail, each, as though they are in the process of becoming miniature demons themselves, part of the kingdom of the demonic controller. You may remember back in Module 1, we discussed the entry of two spiritual entities into the evolution of humanity. The first of these, Lucifer, entered into our astral. The second, named Ahriman, entered into our etheric levels. What does it mean that Ahriman operates on the etheric levels? Well, in the first place, it means that Ahriman's kingdom is the plant kingdom. The science writer Michael Pollan tells the story of how he was planting potatoes in his garden and watching bees pollinating a nearby apple tree. It suddenly struck him that just as the apple trees were able to make use of bees in order to reproduce, he, the human, was actually in the same role in choosing to plant a humble potato. He began to wonder whether plants were able to cleverly manipulate human beings into assisting plants to reproduce. In looking back, we do have a tendency to see history as a story of the triumph of humanity. But it could be argued that plants have just as much right to see the last 15,000 years as a triumph of the plant kingdom. After all, we clear old growth forests, exterminate animal species, and decimate ancient ecologies in order to plant wheat, corn, sugarcane, and apple trees. Since humans created tools to develop and specify plant breeding programs, Ahriman has been able to increase his influence on our consciousness through the plant kingdom to an enormous degree. You may well ask how the etheric kingdom of plants can affect our consciousness, because our consciousness arises from the fact we possess an astral. The answer is intriguing. Plants have two methods of reproduction. Asexual reproduction is commonly found in shrubs and trees, especially trees which belong to very old ecologies. Sexual reproduction is found in flowering plants. In fact, a flower is the sexual organ of the plant. Reverend Mario was once giving a lecture when he picked up the rose which someone had placed on his side table. "You think this is a beautiful flower," he said, "but to the plant it just means one thing, sex." The flower is where the plant actually pushes into the astral levels. It is flowering plants which have had the greatest effect on human consciousness. We may value a plant for the beauty of its flowers. The lily and the tulip are obvious examples with long histories of human appreciation. These three species alone have been incredibly effective in having humans plant them, care for them, and propagate them across the whole globe. Many species have gone further than a beautiful flower. Some plants cater to our need for sweetness. Apart from sugarcane, there are all the fruits we love. It turns out that sugar is actually quite toxic to the human body, so the sweet tooth syndrome is not a personal characteristic. It is the aromatic forces playing with our etheric. Possibly the greatest success stories of the plant kingdom are the grains, and in particular wheat. Wheat has managed to get humans to pay it so much attention that through selective breeding, the number of chromosomes it possesses has increased from 13 to 42. If you consider that the difference between the normal human being and the Down's syndrome person is only one chromosome, then you may appreciate that the wheat we eat today is far different from the wheat eaten by our distant ancestors. The grains work on our need for power and control. They tell us that we can have control over our food needs. Modern dwarf wheat grows all over the world in a huge varieties of climates and conditions. It was developed by a scientist called Norman Borlaug with the laudable aim of solving the problem of world hunger. And in a sense, it did manage to do that. Borlaug duly received his own reward, a Nobel Prize, but he bequeathed to us an uneasy inheritance. Alvers talks about the plan of man, but Ahriman also has a plan, and that is to control consciousness. You might think that the plants would be happy just becoming the dominant life form on our planet. The consciousness of the plant kingdom, however, was only just getting started. In the 1950s, researchers in the US started coming up with a novel idea. You get fat from eating fat. Now, this is despite millennia of evidence to the contrary. All of a sudden, there was an enormous impetus to a movement that wanted to shift eating habits to much higher carbohydrate levels. In reality, this meant that people were being asked to eat more grains, especially wheat, and more processed food, which inevitably included sugar. It took about 10 years for this movement to grab hold of the American scientific establishment, and after another 10 years, it gained so much political power that the food pyramid, which emphasized grains and carbohydrates and minimized meat and fats, became installed as a sacred scientific fact. And in February 1977 was officially endorsed as the recommended American diet by a congressional select committee. In the last 40 years, we have seen the results of the largest experiment ever conducted. It was conducted upon the whole population of the USA and by extension became the dietary protocol of the Western world. After 50 years, we are now in a position to study the results of this experiment. These results include an obesity epidemic, a type 2 diabetes epidemic, a depression epidemic, an epidemic of Alzheimer's disease and dementia. Heart disease has risen from being almost unheard of 100 years ago to being one of the major causes of death. An upsurge of autoimmune disease. I'm not trying to convert you to a particular way of eating, for that is the choice of the individual, and that's a very important thing. What you eat is in your choice. But what I want to do here is to point out that a huge movement which affected millions, if not billions of people, was directed by the consciousness of the plant kingdom. You may object and say, but these people were scientists, they would have had research and evidence for their program. The sad truth is that in recent years, every piece of research put forward to support the high carbohydrate diet has been shown to be faulty. Not one of the standards of studies used came up to minimal standards of scientific truth. Not one. The relatively few scientists who promoted the push did so because they became emotionally involved and saw the results their emotions wished them to see. They had become victims of the consciousness of Ahriman acting within the etheric. To come back to the image of tarot card 15 at the lower left hand of the page, you will see that Ahriman has his helpers. They are quite willing helpers because the chains which bind them are loose enough to slip over the head, but they prefer slavery to freedom. The work of Ahriman then is to create slaves. It is interesting that one plant which has achieved huge notoriety in the last 50 or so years is marijuana. Marijuana is very successful at having plant breeders create new and improved versions of the species. These new versions are much more psychoactive than the original plant and have been propagated all over the world. Marijuana specializes in chemicals which attach themselves to the opiate receptors in the brain. This creates an addiction. Very recent research has discovered that our modern wheat also contains chemical compounds that attach themselves to the opiate receptors in the brain. And yes, wheat is addictive. Just think for a moment of the aroma of freshly baked bread. It has been shown that people will eat almost twice as much bread and pasta, for example, as the body needs. Just this one piece of information goes a long way to explaining the obesity epidemic. Now let us turn our attention to the image at the bottom right hand of the image page. This is another tarot card. It is number 5, the Hierophant. The old name for the card was the Pope. You can see elements of this in the design of the card. For our times, however, the name Hierophant is much more relevant. The Hierophant was the person in the ancient mysteries who was in charge of the initiation. Now, we are not dealing with the ancient mysteries, but with the Christ mysteries. So in this image, we're dealing with Christ as Hierophant. Let us take a step back in time and discuss the process of initiation for a moment. Each of the mystery schools did this in a different way, but the aim was always the same. If we go back several thousand years into the civilization of ancient Egypt, then we find an understanding of initiation as an understanding of life and death. Some of the Egyptian texts, which are now considered to be about the soul's experiences in the afterlife, could also be considered as a description of initiation. In this experience, the candidate for initiation would lie in a stone coffin, and through the ritual, the astral would be lifted out of the body together with some of the etheric. I might add at this point that one of the elements of the ritual was for 12 acolytes or assistants to chant together as directed by the Hierophant. Reverend Mario observed on one occasion that some of the members of his choir had taken the role of acolyte during such initiations and had sung off tune. This had two repercussions. In the first place, the candidate, instead of being elevated into the spiritual world, was caught between heaven and earth, like a swinging pendulum. Those who had suffered this fate would experience in this life a swing of emotions between ecstasy and depression. On the other hand, the off-key singers in this incarnation had taken on professions such as counselors and psychologists to heal such people. Of course, the out-of-tune acolytes were also now faced with the challenge of learning to sing in tune. In the Egyptian initiation, as we have said, the etheric and astral bodies both leave the physical body. Now, ordinarily, if this happens, the person dies. Therefore, a tiny amount of etheric was left behind in the body to maintain physical existence. To someone looking on from the outside, it would appear as though the candidate was in a very deep trance or coma. The candidate, however, was able to ascend into the spiritual worlds and experience the reality of spirit. In this time, the negative influence within the astral and the etheric would emanate into the consciousness of the candidate, and these influences were absorbed by those assisting the initiation. In the course of their experience, the initiate would meet the guiding principles of their evolution and also the directors of the evolution of humanity. They would return to their life with a certain knowledge of the spiritual worlds. When I first arrived at Reverend Mario's centre in Perth, I asked him once why such initiations were no longer performed. He replied that initiations certainly occurred in the 20th century, but initiation was now given by the very circumstances of life, and Christ was the director, or hierophant, of the initiation. In order to understand something of how this came about and what it means for our future, look once more at the pentagram in the top left-hand corner of the image page. We know it is a very old symbol, having been adopted by the Pythagorean Brotherhood about 500 years before the incarnation of Christ. It was also adopted by the early Christians. For them, the five points of the star represent the five wounds of Christ on the cross. Why is this representation associated with the etheric? It is because the etheric energy flows most strongly in our blood. The book of Leviticus states simply, the life is in the blood. On the cross, the blood of Christ drips into the earth. That is, the etheric of Christ entered the earth. In other words, Christ now contests the domain of Ahriman. It has taken 2,000 years, but in our time the power of Christ flows from the earth and through the plant kingdom. Spiritual vision can perceive this especially in the beauty of trees in their natural habitat, where it appears as though the forest is part of a song of praise for the creation. The Ahrimanic forces in the meantime had, as we noted, found a way to work through plants into the consciousness of humanity. The move to create new versions of plants, and especially the desire to experiment with genetic modification, is the attempt of the Ahrimanic forces to counteract the living energy of Christ within the earth. You may, at this stage, have a question in mind. If Christ is in the etheric, why does Ahriman seem to be running the show? Reverend Mario once gave a very compelling image to describe the relationship between Ahriman and Christ. He said that Ahriman sits in a cave with a calculator in front of him, and he calculates everything to a nicety. Michael, however, stands behind him with a sword, and he makes the final decision. If we understand that the cave is the human brain, and Michael is the executor of Christ, then we can understand that no matter how much Ahriman calculates and schemes, everything he contrives is taken into the power of Christ, who then turns it to his advantage. Ahriman's intent was to make use of the way the plant kingdom can manipulate human consciousness into making us more and more dependent on the earth. Already, our economies and values are bound tightly to the success of certain plants for beauty, food, and drugs. The fact that this has had a destructive effect on our physical bodies is actually a side effect to Ahriman's program. His goal is to so control our thinking that we come to regard the physical world as the only reality. This would mean that in aeons to come, we would lose the ability to separate ourselves from the body, and just as the body dissolves back into the earth upon death, so would our astral and etheric and even our soul become part of the earth. Christ, however, is also very interested in our physical body. He encourages us to disassociate ourselves from it, to realize that I am not my physical body. The plan of man, established by the Christ, is that we should give up the physical body so that we can once again become spiritual beings. This is not to say that we discard the physical, but rather transform it. Gradually, over the next 1,000 years, those who align themselves with the Christ impulse will need the physical body less and less. Reverend Mario once suggested that a few 1,000 years hence, all that will remain of the physical is a head with wings. And eventually, we shall be able to transform the whole of the physical into spirit. We shall return to this adventure in a later module. The first step in this physical transformation is through illness, especially illness that is caused by the body having to exist on food substances which are not those for which it was originally designed. One might say that the epidemic of illnesses from Alzheimer's disease to heart problems actually aids us in making these changes. Christ has used the work of Ahriman to further the plan of Christ evolution. Now you might say, if so much illness is caused by our choice of food, shouldn't there be a food regimen that will avoid us getting sick? If we are looking for a physical solution, we may be on the wrong track. If our soul has aligned itself with Christ, then it may be that it has chosen illness as its path of initiation. I'll just say that again. It's a very difficult concept. If our soul has aligned itself with Christ, it may be that our soul has actually chosen illness as its path of initiation. We are not as free as we might think. The food choices we elect to follow are chosen by the soul, and if the soul intends illness as a process we need to experience, then we shall no doubt choose the very food that produces this illness. On the other hand, if we learn the lesson intended for us through the illness, then a road to recovery may be opened up to us. You may remember the story in Module 3 about the woman who was dying of cancer and then had the vision of Christ. The purpose of her illness was to prepare her etheric and astral bodies to perceive this vision. And once this was achieved, there was no further purpose to the cancer. And since she had more work to do in this incarnation, she was provided with a physical body that could carry this out. This brings us to another aspect to the work of Christ in the etheric. In the early 1920s, Rudolf Steiner predicted that after about 1929, Christ would be visible in the etheric of the world. Steiner himself died before he could see this prediction become true. But in 1929, a few souls who possessed a real clairvoyance saw, independently of one another, over a period of time, the figure of Christ enthroned in the spiritual worlds. Christ did not just make an appearance in the etheric of the world. He was crucified for a second time by the negative forces which had gathered in the etheric. These forces manifested in the two world wars, for war is the result of unresolved struggles on the etheric level, which is why it involves enormous bloodshed. You will note one incredibly significant difference between the pair in card 15, the devil, and the pair in card 5, the Hierophant. In the devil, the man and woman have their backs turned, so they do not perceive the directing force which is behind them. That is, this force is in the unconscious. The two people in the Hierophant card are looking with great reverence towards the Hierophant. This is the crucial moment in the Christ mysteries where we meet with Christ face to face. The meeting with Christ is the moment of initiation. We have already heard how the Apostle Paul was struck down on the Damascus Road by his meeting with Christ. Paul has an interesting perspective on his encounter when he tells the church in Corinth, "Last of all, as to one untimely born, he appeared to me also." It is interesting that the word untimely actually means prematurely, as in a premature birth. For Paul's vision of Christ in the etheric is premature by 2,000 years. In our era, however, the time for this meeting has come. Over the years, I've heard from quite a few people about their visions. Some of these are grand indeed, but a vision of Christ is not necessarily the meeting with Christ in the etheric, for visions may occur on the astral levels. Such a vision is meaningful, but our astral perception is tainted by our own desires, needs, concepts, and emotions. There is one simple way to tell that the meeting with Christ has occurred. The person is never the same again. If you look for a moment again at the image in the bottom right-hand corner of the image page, the two acolytes are clothed in different designs. The one on the left, our left, is clad in a robe covered with roses, representing the etheric. The one on our right wears a robe with a design of lilies, representing the astral. This shows the preconditions to the meeting with Christ. In the first place, our etheric must become permeated with a yearning and a longing to unite with the Christ impulse. Secondly, the astral must be at peace. Jesus invites us to consider the lilies of the field, how they grow. They neither toil nor spin, yet I tell you, even Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. To achieve the state of the lily within the astral, we need to arrive at a state where we have relinquished everything. Our money, our relationships, our work, our career, our safety, our security, our opinions, our connection with the past, our expectations of the future. Like the lily, we need to be in a state where there is only a now. For most of us, this is something that we cannot plan to do. But it may happen in the sacred moment that this state arises within us. Consciousness opens like a rose, and completely without warning or expectation or planning, Christ is there. There are no words which may describe the meeting with Christ, but we are forever changed. We shall not want what we have desired in the past. We shall carry the experience deep within the heart, and it will infuse us with the presence of Christ. Remember, Christ gave only two directions to his disciples: watch and pray. As the music returns, allow yourself to slip gently into the present moment. Close your eyes and relax. Place your sacred word upon your heart. Feel it shining there. That is the rose within the heart gently opening. Be like the lily, patient, present, and beautiful. In this state, allow the presence of Christ to surround you and enfold you in his love. Ask that you might see the world through the eyes of Christ. Remain in this state while the music plays, and when it is finished, slowly open your eyes and look around your world with the freshness of renewed vision. Look with the eyes of love. So shall it be.